All right. Hello, everyone. Happy Sunday evening. It's been a pretty nice day, kind of a relaxing day. Jasmine washed my hair today, which some of you may know the only way to get my hair washed now is for someone else to do it because there's a cast on my arm. In fact, Kathy, somebody will probably have to wash my hair in Costa Rica. I happen to think of that, you know, I won't be able to wash my hair there either. So, I don't get my hair washed as often, because although Jasmine's very willing to do it, and I'm sure Danielle would be very willing to do it, you know, they have their own lives, so they're not always here, and so it had been from Monday until Sunday, a whole week, and today I got my hair washed, and it feels nice. Thank you, Kathy, for offering to wash my hair. Y'all probably have to have it washed at least a couple times while we're in, or in Costa Rica. Kathy has written, Jesus washed feet, hair is a better option. Yeah, I get my cast off the day after we get back from Costa Rica. In fact, I was supposed to, it was due to come off on March 10th, but I leave on March 7th for Costa Rica, and they said better to take it off late than early. So it will be on the entire time we're in Costa Rica, and then when I get back, it comes off. So we'll still need a little assistance while I'm there. I can do a lot of things by myself, but I can't do everything by myself. So tonight I'm going to do something that I haven't done since May 1 of 2013. I'm going to look at my Seven Steps journal. When I used to teach the Seven Steps twice a week, in fact. I taught it on Sunday evening, and I taught it on Monday afternoon. And I went all the way through Step 1 and Step 2 that way. And I had just barely started Step 3 when I felt to let go of it. And interestingly, within a couple weeks of letting go of it, that's when the entire website, I don't know if you guys remember, all of ReginaDonAkers.com was wiped out. Oh, Cheryl was doing the Seven Steps tonight too. That's funny. That's funny. I didn't know that. For the first time in months. Okay, guys. I guess it's time for the rebirth of the Seven Steps. All right. Well, that's what I'm doing too. That's very funny. So, as I was saying, I had just barely started step three. I think I was like five or maybe seven quotes into step three. Oh, I just realized I don't have my Seven Steps book, but I know where it's at. I'll grab it real quick. I was just five or seven quotes into step three when I gave it up, when I felt to stop for a while. And then shortly after that, the guidance came to do the teachings of Inner Ramana. So almost all of the time since then, I've been doing the teachings of Inner Ramana. And tonight I felt to go back to the Seven Steps. So that's what I'm going to do. Let me grab my book real quick. I haven't been contemplating the Seven Steps, really, in all that time either. I've maybe contemplated a few days, but not a lot. I think one reason for that is because I'm writing the Minister Preparation Program for Awakening Together. I started doing that around this time, you know, around, I think I started doing it around April of last year, April or May, so around the time I quit the Seven Steps. And the truth is, that's a very contemplative work for me, writing the Minister Preparation Program. And in fact, some people know that some days I spend 5 or 6 hours. I get out of bed, you know, I could get out of bed 5 on average. I'll start working on it. And it could be 11, noon, 1, depending on the day before I actually stop doing that work. But that work is very, very contemplative for me. The people who are in the program will be able to tell you that, especially the phase two part of the program. So I think because I'm spending so much time in contemplation with the MPP program, the Seven Steps has just got kind of put on the back burner. But maybe someday it will get picked up again as far as contemplation goes. I don't really know. It's still sitting here right next to my chair where I do my contemplation. But it hasn't been touched since I started writing the MPP program. But that's okay. Contemplation is still happening. So I'm going to start tonight with step three. Like I mentioned before, I got all the way through step one and step two back when I used to do that. So I'm going to start with step three. Step three, let me look at my journal real quick. I'll be able to find. Step three starts with quote 525. If any of you happen to have the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, you want to run and grab it. We're starting on page 91, step three. For those of you who don't know about the seven steps, each of the seven steps has an objective. And the objective of step one, let me just go back a little bit, and I'll kind of do a little review. Here was the objective of step one. Know that a journey that never goes beyond words, ideas, thoughts, or concepts is not a journey to awakening. That was the objective of step one, to really realize that in an extremely deep way so that all attempts to learn, to gain spiritual knowledge, just get completely abandoned. Again, the objective of step one was know that a journey that never goes beyond words, ideas, thoughts, or concepts is not a journey to awakening. Oops, can you guys, no, my mic just disappeared. Can you guys still hear me? Probably not. Hold on 1 second. Ah, pop-ups everywhere. Let me go out and come back. Ah, hard to do with my casted hand going out and coming back if I'm making it. Slowly but surely. Okay, back in the room.
And Lynn is our admin for the evening, so I'm turning the room over to you and the mic back to Regina.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I got those pop-ups that I get every now and then. They usually come about 5 or so minutes after I first take the mic. But also, once they happen, once they seem to be done, and then I'm able to maintain the mic. So I had just finished going over the objective of step one. I'll now go over the objective for step two. This was even my heart sings just looking at the objective, because step two was just so magnificent for me. Know that the world is a dreamlike illusion. Know that all of the following are dreamlike illusions. The world, the body, the universe, all dimensions, all events, motions, and actions, time. Almost all of the words in a dictionary describe dreamlike illusions. And, you know, we all talk about the world as an illusion if we're core students or something similar. But what was really wonderful, and I mean this with all the heart that I have, what was really wonderful about step two is that as I contemplated the quotes in step two, I saw that. I saw the difference between what is real and what is not real. And a clarity arose in me that is way beyond any clarity that appeared to be present when step two began. I don't feel I've stepped into any kind of confusion at all about the difference between what is real and what is not real since finishing step two. I feel like that is as clear to me as the fact, you know, the idea that I used to be a woman once was. You know, I am a woman was very, very clear to me at one time. I would never have been confused to think that I was a man or a dog or something else. Well, since going through step two, that's the way I feel about true and false. I feel like I'm extremely, extremely clear on that. Was not before. And the gratitude that I have for step two, if you could feel what's going on in my heart right now, you would understand. Just deep, deep, deep gratitude. Step three, see how the imposter self perpetuates its imaginary self and all illusion and suffering. So that's the objective of step three, to see very, very clearly how we hold on to the ego, to put it in a different language. See how the imposter self perpetuates its imaginary self and all illusion and suffering. And when I stopped the seven steps because my attention went to the MPP program, I was nearly done contemplating step three, but I had not finished. I think I'm literally only a few quotes from being done, though. And I had just started teaching it, and I only got a few quotes started. So I'm going to start now by teaching from the seven steps to awakening. More primarily, I'm going to be teaching from my journal, my contemplative result. And again, the objective of step three is to see how we hold on to the ego, or see how the imposter self perpetuates its imaginary self and all illusion and suffering. So with that said, why don't we start the way I traditionally have always started the seven steps, even though it's been nearly a year. Why don't we start with a bit of silence? Amen. And what I will do for those of you who are interested is I will give you a link to my seven-step journal so that you can read along with me. If you're like me, I like to see the words as I'm hearing them. Some people are very good auditory learners is the word I learned when I was a corporate trainer, very good auditory learners, which means they're good at listening without seeing. I am more focused on the visual type of learning. So even if someone is reading to me, I enjoy very, very much having it in front of me so I can read along as well. I get more from the reading that way. So if you're like me and you like to see the words also, you can use the link that I've just put in the room. If you happen to be listening on the radio or listening to this audio later, you can go to RDA7, that is the digit 7, it's not spelled out, RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And when you get to RDA 7 Steps Journal, you click on Step 3 up on the menu bar. Step 1, 2, and 3 are the only ones that are there. And then you click on the very first option, which shows you the journal writings for quotes 525 to 550, and make your way to 525, because that's where we're beginning. We're going to start at the top and work our way through. Now, everything that is written in my journal was written after contemplating a quote. All the seven steps to awakening is a collection of quotes. It's nothing else, just quotes that are contemplated. And the clarity arises within you. The teacher arises within you, the contemplator. That is the purpose. The first quotes in step three come from a book called The Garland of Guru's Sayings, which is one of my very favorite books. So it's wonderful that it's included in the seven steps. It's the teachings of Ramana Maharshi, but they are reworded by a poet named Muruganar. And so it's really Muruganar's poetic expression of Ramana Maharshi's teaching. So that's where the first set of quotes for step three come from. And this is quote 525 from the Garland of Guru's sayings. So long as one retains a trace of individuality, one is a seeker still, and not a true seer, effort-free. Even though one's penance and one's powers may be wonderful indeed. So it's kind of interesting that it talks about one's powers, because one thing that can happen on the spiritual path as we are letting go of ego is we can seem to acquire powers. Some of you may know that at one time I seemed to have the power, if you want to use that word, of scribing, or some people would call it channeling. Very direct, I would hear an inner dictation and I would write it down. There was also a time when I was able to step completely out of myself and speak spirit for Laurent. There are people who have what is called the power of healing. In fact, Jesus in the New Testament had the power of healing. There are people that have the power of clairvoyance. They can see the future. There are different powers that can come. Powers don't come to everyone. And typically a person does not have all of the powers, even if they have some of the powers. They have the ones they have. But the powers do happen. And lots of times people get very excited about these powers. They think that something really amazing. Yes, cities, that's the word. Thank you. They think something really amazing has happened. They think that they're spiritually advanced. Other people think that they're spiritually advanced. But what this quote is emphasizing is if there's even a trace of individuality yet, no matter how wonderful your powers may appear to be or someone else's powers may appear to be, you're actually still a seeker. It kind of reminds me of some teaching in the Holy Spirit's interpretation of the New Testament, NTI, that emphasizes that we should remain the student. It reminds me also of, teachings that we see in many, many places about humility, remaining very, very humble. And there's something about these powers that can arise that can lead people to stop being the student, stop being humble, and yet ego is still present. So this quote says, so long as one retains a trace of individuality, one is a seeker still, and not a true seer, effort-free. Even though one's penance and one's powers may be wonderful indeed. All right, so with that said, I am going to go to my journal and I am going to read to you what I wrote after contemplation of this quote from the Garland of Guru's sayings. And here it is. Any and all seeing difference between me and another maintains me as different, me as distinct, and therefore maintains ego, or the imposter self. Notice every idea of difference and look at it with the wise realization. Believing this difference maintains the idea of separate individual self. Allow the sight of sameness to come and replace the idea of difference. So remember, the objective of step three is to see how the imposter self perpetuates its imaginary self and all illusion and suffering, or worded more simply, to see how we hold on to ego. And what this is saying is, if I see any difference between me and another, that scene of difference is maintaining ego. It doesn't matter whether I put that person on a pedestal or whether I put myself on the pedestal. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. And, of course, there was a time, no doubt about it, when I did both. There was a time when I put others on a pedestal. And there was a time when I put myself on a pedestal above others. I don't feel that happens anymore. I feel that I do see all the same. All, you know, like used to, there were some people that would have been above me, and there were other people who would have been below me, you know, in my viewpoint. And what has happened is that has come together, and I see everyone as the same. I realize that there are people that it is still helpful for me to listen to, because they're still able to point me to realizations that has not yet happened here. And I listen to those people. It would be absolutely foolish not to. I also realize there are people who have not yet had the realizations I've had, and some of them feel they're struggling or suffering, and, you know, my guidance is actually helpful to them. And I'm happy to continue to do what I feel guided to do, which seems to be helping others. But in spite of the fact that there are those that I listen to and those that I seem to help, I don't actually see any difference. You could take the person, you know, not that I have a person that I think is the most enlightened person on the planet now, but if I did, you could take that person and put that person in front of me. And you could take another person that might be the furthest from enlightenment, not that I have an idea of who that is in my mind either, but if there was, you could put that person in front of me. And although on the one hand, I would see that apparent difference, I would see the suffering and, you know, maybe the anger or the self-hatred that was with the unenlightened one, and I would see the joy and the clarity and the love that was with the enlightened one, at the same time, I would not see any difference. And there would be no difference in my heart for either of them. So it's kind of a paradox, the ability to see differences without seeing differences. But it's a paradox that seems to happen naturally at some point. You know, Jesus, giving us A Course in Miracles, saw that there was still suffering happening. And yet at the same time, that seer could not have seen any difference between us and him, right? So the ability to see differences without seeing differences, it's something that arises, it's something that happens at some point. Where does it come from? I think it comes from willingness. In fact, when this particular journal entry was written, which would have been July 23rd, 2012, that's the day I sat down and wrote this, I wasn't seeing the way I see today. This is a scene that has developed since then. And I know that I wasn't, because a part of what happened in my contemplation was I wrote a practice for myself. And the practice that I wrote was this: notice every idea of difference and look at it with the wise realization, believing this difference maintains the idea of separate individual self. So I wrote a practice for myself because I knew that this was still not developed, or this had still not naturally occurred, this scene of sameness. And I had the willingness for this to develop. And so the willingness then gets expressed through this practice. That's really what practice is it's the expression of willingness. And notice the practice is just to notice. When I have a thought of difference, if I had a thought that this certain teacher was higher than me, not just more realized than me, because I can still see that, but higher than me, right? That's a little different. I was to notice that idea of difference and look at it with the realization, believing this maintains the idea of separate individual self. And if I saw someone who seemed to be lower than me, right? Same thing. Notice that I see that way with the wise realization, believing this difference maintains the idea of separate individual self. And what's really wonderful about that practice that I wrote for myself was that there is no judgment or denial in it. Neither one, right? I'm both noticing when I'm having thoughts that say that people are different, and I'm realizing, ah, this is one way that I hold on to the ego. Without judgment, just like an ah. And believe it or not, that's really all I needed to do. I didn't need to force my mind to not see differences, because that's resistance. That's fighting the ego. And that which resists and fights is ego. So by using resistance or fighting to try and overcome the ego, I'm actually using the ego to try and overcome the ego. And believe it or not, that strengthens the ego. You know, if you think of the ego as like a muscle, whenever I use the ego, even if I'm using it to try and overcome it, I actually strengthen it. So it's pretty dang counterproductive. So I don't want to use the ego to try and overcome the ego. I want to use the right mind. And one thing that we all know about the right mind, the way the Course puts it, is Holy Spirit accepts. That means I want to accept what I see happening right now, even if what I see happening right now is something that keeps the ego intact. I still want to accept it. So I accept this idea of difference that I see in my mind. And then I just gently, without judgment, realize, aha, this is a part of how I keep holding on to ego. I just look at it. And then the next line that was written in my journal after this practice was, allow the sight of sameness to come and replace the idea of difference. Do you hear that? Allow the sight of sameness to come and replace the idea of difference. You see, sometimes people call this grace, but notice this isn't something that I make happen. Someone said to me the other day something like, you know, I still see lots of judgments in my mind, but I can't make them stop. No, you can't. You can't. But you can notice, there's a judgment again. This is a part of how I hold on to ego. There's a judgment. Without judgment, there's a judgment. And then you can allow acceptance to come and replace judgment. You can allow the sight of sameness to come and replace the idea of difference. You just be open to it. Give willingness. So again, 525 says, any and all seeing difference between me and another maintains me as different, me as distinct, and therefore maintains ego or imposter self. Notice every idea of difference and look at it with the wise realization. Believing this difference maintains the idea of separate individual self. Allow the sight of sameness to come and replace the idea of difference. And that is 525. For those of you who have joined us since I started, I am reading from my online 7 Steps journal. I have started with step 3 from the 7 Steps of Awakening. And what I'm going to do is give you a link to my next journal entry, which is 526. If you're already in the journal, though, you don't have to reopen this particular link, 526. What you can do if you're in 525 is just kind of scroll down underneath the comment and reply area, and you'll see on the left where there's a little blue 526, and you can just click on that and you'll go to 526 without needing to open another link. But those of you who are not yet in the journal, if you'd like to join us in the journal so that you can read along, if you like to read along, I just put a link to 526 in the room, and you are welcome to use that. First, however, I'm going to read, quote, 526 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. Again, this comes from the Garland of Gurus sayings. Poor fellow, you who are so proud of your omniscience, I can't ever say that word, omniscience, when you are questioned. Poor fellow, you who are so proud of your omniscience when you are questioned. You who know all things, do you know who you are? You collapse disgraced, discomfited. Oh, man of genius, may this your ego mind dry up as dust and perish utterly. Omniscience. Barb is helping me with pronunciation. So, of course, this particular quote seems to be focusing on pride. Pride of what I know, right? Whether that's pride of what I know, you know, in the world, you know, maybe I'm a scientist, you know, if you watch, what's that lovely show I enjoy? Big Bang Theory. Sheldon, I love Sheldon, he's so funny. But he definitely has pride, if you know Sheldon. Pride because of what he knows. And this happens on the spiritual path as well. You know, pride because of what we know from our spiritual studies. And basically what this is saying, but if you do not have the direct experience of knowing yourself, you know, why are you so proud? What is there to be proud of if you don't even know yourself? And of course, if we did know ourselves, naturally we would not be prideful. So this is not meant to imply if you know yourself, then you can be prideful. It's just pointing out that having pride for what I know is one of the ways we hold on to the ego. Remember, the objective of step 3 is to see how the imposter self perpetuates its imaginary self and all illusion and suffering. Right? And here's how. Pride. Pride for what I know. Or it could also be pride for what I can do. Right? So after I contemplated this, I wrote number 526 in my journal. So this is what I wrote. Pride for knowing is an obstacle to true knowing. Listen to the wisdom of yourself, but realize that pride for wisdom is merely falling back on boosting the idea of false self again. You know, if you have a practice of meditation or contemplation or something similar to that, where you, you know, become still in some way and you're open to wisdom, you can receive great wisdom. Great wisdom. Wisdom that goes far beyond your intellectual understanding of spiritual teachings. Just great clarity. And if you're someone like me, you might even be able to put that clarity into words and write them down. And later, when you read what has been written down, you're just in awe of what has been written down. But being in awe is different than being prideful. It seems completely helpful to be grateful for the wisdom. It seems completely helpful to love the wisdom, to cherish the wisdom, to practice the wisdom, to further contemplate the wisdom, to spend time with the wisdom. You know, all of that feels completely helpful. But it does not feel helpful at all to be prideful about the wisdom. And anyone who has experienced wisdom, this deep, deep wisdom that seems to come up, bubble up somehow, knows that pride is one of the ego reactions or retaliation to the wisdom. You know, ego has somehow lost some footing by the wisdom arising, and ego wants to gain that footing back. And pride is one of the things that is offered. You know, one of the books that I'm looking at right now is Resurrecting Jesus by Adyashanti. And he talks in that book about, he calls it arrogance, but he talks about after he had an awakening experience and he would go into meditation, how the whole time he was sitting in meditation, his mind would go on and on telling him how he's better than all these people around him now because he, you know, sees from a higher perspective. And the way he describes it is he was shocked. He didn't know such pride or arrogance was even in him, but it was. And he talks about how he just watched it. He just watched it. And eventually it seemed to move on, die, pass away. You know, pride is a temporary thing. Unless, of course, we feed it. Unless, of course, we get our kicks from it. If we get our kicks from being prideful, then we take it up, we play with it, and we retain the ego through pride. So there's nothing wrong with, and in fact, I would highly encourage cherishing any wisdom that comes through you. Cherish it, love it, be grateful for it, spend time with it, listen to it, let it be your teacher, right? But pride, when that arises, let that pass by. Because as soon as we connect with pride, we also reconnect with ego. And that's going to be a block to additional wisdom. Again, from my journal, pride for knowing is an obstacle to true knowing. Listen to the wisdom of yourself, but realize that pride for wisdom is merely falling back on boosting the idea of false self again. So pride has no useful purpose. And if you are in the Seven Steps journal with me and you want to scroll down underneath the comment and reply area, you'll see 527. You can click on that. That is where we're going next. I'm also going to post a link to 527 in the room for anyone who wants to join us in the journal. First, I will read 527 from the Garland of Gurus Sayings, reprinted, of course, in the Seven Steps of Awakening. Unless by one means or another, mind dies out, and certitude from true self-recognition comes, the knowledge which mere learning brings is like the horse's horn, unreal. And of course, I think he's talking about the unicorn there, right, with the horn. Unless by one means or another, mind dies out, and certitude from true self-recognition comes.
Whoops. Our pharmacy will be open.
Somebody wants me to go to their pharmacy.
For questions, please call us at 719.
Let me turn down the volume on that thing.
4-7-9-9.
Oh, wow. We'll just wait a second until he's done telling me how to dial his pharmacy.
Walmart.
Walmart Pharmacy. This is a commercial during the Seven Steps teaching.
$10. Our pharmacy will be open today, 10 to 6. For questions or to opt out of prescription messages, please call us at 719-6.
Yeah, I don't know how to make it stop.
9.
We'll just be patient.
5. Thank you for choosing Walmart.
You're welcome. Bye. All right. So, Rory is writing, pride is before a crash and a haughty spirit before stumbling. All right, so back to 527. Unless by one means or another, mind dies out and certitude from true self-recognition comes. The knowledge which mere learning brings is like the horse's horn, unreal. All right, so let's look at what I wrote in my Seven Steps journal. The answer is before mind. The answer is not in a mind that understands. Inner guidance will come to guide back to the state that precedes the birth of mind. Follow it, disregarding the crowds. Stay focused on the lone inner call. Disregard everything else. Awakening comes in only this way. It's interesting because in the Bible, Jesus talked about the narrow road and the wide road. And he encouraged us to find and follow the narrow road. Some of you may be familiar with that teaching. This talks about disregarding the crowds. Each one of us within ourselves has a guidance system, whether you call it Holy Spirit or intuition or Ganesh or whatever you call it. Each one of us within ourselves has a guidance system. And that guidance system that is within is completely unique as your fingerprint. One of the mistakes that is often made on the spiritual path is the belief that the path should look the same for everyone. And in fact, as far as I can tell, some people have spent lifetimes trying to copy the way another person awakened, and of course without that same success, because they were looking outwardly. You know, if I look outwardly at Buddha, and I say, well, this is what Buddha did. Buddha sat down underneath the Bodhi tree and said, you know, I'm not going to get up until I'm enlightened. So I'm going to go do that. I'm going to go sit underneath this tree in my backyard, and I'm not going to get up until I'm enlightened. Well, that probably won't work for me. And the reason is because I'm looking out and copying instead of going within and seeking the guidance that is guiding me. You know, one example that I like to use is the example of, well, let's compare awakening to a location. Let's say there's a restaurant, awakening restaurant, and each one of us wants to get to awakening restaurant. But we each live in different places. I'm in Pueblo, Colorado. Kathy's in California. Let's see, who else? Dove is in New York. Karen's in North Carolina. Barb's in Oregon. Jay is over there in Chicago. Teddy is also in California, but a different place than Kathy. You know, we can go on and on down the list, right? Well, if we give one set of directions to everyone and say, okay, here's how you get to Awakening Restaurant, most of us are just not going to find it because the directions only worked from Pueblo. They didn't work from Chicago and from California and from North Carolina, right? You need different directions in order to get to the same place. Well, that's what inner guidance is. Inner guidance is the different directions to get us to the same place. And so one thing we need to learn to do is to look within for that guidance. Now sometimes, in fact, often, as we look within for that guidance also guides us to use something outside. So that inner guidance may have us listening to a particular teacher for a time. That inner guidance may have us studying a particular book, you know, like A Course in Miracles or NTI or The Seven Steps to Awakening or anything else. And if that's where our inner guidance has us, that's where we should be. But that teacher is not what's awakening me. That book is not what's awakening me. What's awakening me is that guidance. That guidance is taking me where I am to go. And maybe my path will look completely different than the path of the people around me. Certainly every Christian mystic that some of us sometimes read, and you know, they had such wonderful clarity and such a deep love for God. You know, those Christian mystics were following a completely different path than every Christian around them. Some of them even risking their lives. If they had been caught following their path, you know, they would have been burned at the stake or or something like that, something lovely like that. But they followed the inner calling all by themselves, completely alone, ignoring the crowds, walking down the narrow path. And to some point, that's what we each have to do, each and every one of us at some point. Now, we do seem to have a strong, like-minded community that those early Christian mystics wouldn't have had. And we can certainly find similarities in our paths, what we share with one another. But you will never find someone else who has the exact same path as you, step by step by step. And if you're trying to fit in with everyone else, you're not following that inner guidance that has come to awaken you. So our role is to be tuned inward and to be willing to go where we are asked to go, to realize in the way we are asked to realize, and to leave everything else alone. This is what will take us back to what I call before mind. Anything that we look out and see, like, oh, the way to awaken is to sit under a tree and say, I won't move until I'm enlightened. That's not true for us. That's not real for us. That's like the unicorn's horn. The only thing that's true for me, real for me, is what my guidance says for me. And that's the same for you. Your guidance is what's true or real for you. It's your path home, your yellow brick road. So again, the answer, which means awakening, is before mind. The answer is not in a mind that understands. Inner guidance will come to guide back to the state that precedes the birth of mind. Follow it, disregarding the crowds. Stay focused on the lone inner call. Disregard everything else. Awakening comes in only this way. So when Buddha sat under the Bodhi tree and said, I am not going to move until I'm enlightened, that is because his inner guidance told him to do that. I'm now pasting a link to 528 in the room. Or if you're in 527, you can just scroll down underneath the comment and reply area and click on 528. First, I'll read the quote from the Seven Steps to Awakening. When ego ends, then one becomes a devotee true. When ego ends, one becomes a knower too. When ego ends, one becomes being supreme. When ego ends, grace fills all space. And what I wrote in my journal is very, very short. It says, before mind, no mind. That is awakening true. One thing that I feel like I mentioned lately, although I'm not quite sure where I mentioned it, but every now and then, you know, several times a year, people either A, ask me if I'm enlightened, or B, tell me that I'm enlightened. It seems to come in one of two ways, either asking me if I am or telling me that I am. And even when they're asking, I often get the strong sense that what they want is for me to say yes. They want me to say yes. And I can't be quite sure why somebody would want me to be enlightened unless, you know, there's this idea of unless she can do it, I can't do it in their mind. You know, there might be that idea there. You know, I saw it, but I don't know for sure why. But I do know that I see that from time to time. People wanting me, really wanting me to claim enlightenment. And I have never felt to do that. Ever. And recently, in the last month or so, somebody kind of asked me why. Why I didn't feel to claim it. And at first, I didn't have an answer. My only answer was, I can't really say why. It's just that's my intuition. That's the thing that guides me within. That thing that guides me within is saying no, right? And so that's why I'm saying no. But then, you know, within a day or two, I realized fully why I'm not to claim enlightenment. And the answer is because when I say I can't really say that this I always means Regina, because it doesn't. I would be not telling a truth if I said that. If I said I mean Regina, that wouldn't be true. And in fact, sometimes the reason I misunderstood is because people assume my I means Regina. And so they assume I'm talking about, you know, this body, me, when I use the word I, and then they therefore misunderstand the communication. And it's not true. I does not always mean Regina. So there is a broader sense, and I refers to that broader sense. In fact, for me, the word I and we are synonymous and has been for some time. But still, even with that being the case, when I say I do not yet feel like the source of we. And I know within myself that I, at some point, comes from the source, the true source. And that's what I call enlightenment. Other people use the word enlightenment to refer to, you could call it a different state or a different stage, and that's fine. You know, that's fine and dandy. But when I say enlightened or awakened, to me the words are synonymous. Some people define those two words differently. I don't. To me they're synonymous. And that's when the I is the source in a very real way. Not a mental, made-up, intellectual way. It has to be the actual, ongoing experience. This is interesting, 528, from the Garland of the Guru's sayings. When ego ends, then one becomes a devotee, true. When ego ends, one becomes a knower, too. When ego ends, one becomes being supreme. When ego ends, grace fills all space. And, you know, another thing that I told this person when I did come to realize why I don't claim enlightenment I said, you know, the masters, the ones that I perceive as masters, the masters, when they say I, they seem to be coming from Source. And I trust them. I know some people don't trust them. I know some people say, you know, if you're going for that, you know, you'll never get there. You'll never be enlightened. You know, like some people say ego never dies. That's just a fairy tale. That doesn't feel true in me. And of course, we each got to follow our own inner guidance. We each got to follow our own feelings. But something in me says there is a true shift that is so completely radical. There's maybe even other shifts along the way, but there's a shift that is so completely radical that after that, the I is Source. And I call that sometimes before mind or no mind. Those words to me are the same. It's Source. It was before mind. Mind was something that was made. This comes from before mind. And so in my journal it says, before mind, no mind, that is awakening true. And I've always liked not fooling myself. I've always liked self-honesty. I've never wanted to pretend that I'm enlightened or claim enlightenment when that which I am speaking of now is not yet experience. All right. So, we can move on to 529. So if you're in 528 with me, you can scroll down and click on 529. I'll also put a link in the room. I'm a little slower because I'm working with my left hand. My right hand is in a cast. Barb is writing, Robert Adams says, I is consciousness. I is God. I is pure awareness. That's exactly what I'm talking about. When the I that this lip speaks truly means that as my experience, I doubt then I would still would say I'm enlightened. I doubt that would happen. Unless that's the way sometimes it happens. I don't know. But less than that, I will not claim enlightenment. No matter how clear, no matter how peaceful, no matter how joyous, I just have no interest in it. Okay, so 529. First, I'll read from the Seven Steps to Awakening. Since every vice springs from the false pleasures of swerving from the self, the plenitude of virtue is the perfect peace of pure awareness following the end of the ego, which is by such false pleasures fed. Since every vice springs from the false pleasures of swerving from the self, the plenitude of virtue is the perfect peace of pure awareness following the end of the ego, which is by such false pleasures fed. Whoops, somebody has taken the mic from me. Is that true? Can you hear me? I see Jelly Bean with the mic. Yes. Hold on one second. You didn't know what you were doing? Okay. Just testing. Okay, yeah. Just wait until somebody asks you to take the mic, and then you can take the mic. All right, so 529. Since every vice springs from the false pleasures of swerving from the self, the plenitude of virtue is the perfect peace of pure awareness, following the end of the ego, which is by such false pleasures fed. Since we only have 4 more minutes, why don't we just go directly to the journal for 529? Looking to the world for pleasure is an obstacle to awakening. Notice whenever the mind has latched onto needing an idea or circumstance for happiness. Then release that idea immediately. Be willing to be happy with nothing, void, and you will find the golden key that opens the door to self. Well, here is something I have not yet transcended. You could say there has been great, great, great progress. But I notice on a daily basis, I'm still doing this practice, I still notice ideas that come up that would say, oh, this would be nice. You know, to be able to go here, to be able to do that. You know, the mind that I have is still constantly looking. And I just kind of gently tell it, no, it's not necessary. No, you know, if we're called, we'll go, but otherwise it's not necessary. And I kind of talk to it and bring it back from its fantasies. But to say that that seeking outwardly has completely died, that it never ever happens anymore, and there are some things in me that have completely died, that never happen anymore, that is not yet one of them. Just today, you know, it had the thought, oh, maybe someday leave Pueblo would be nice. Where, you know, where? And I didn't even allow the where. I didn't allow the thought to continue, so there was no fantasy about the where. But I just saw the mind thinking, oh, you know, we've kind of done this place. Where next? Right? So what this is saying is when that happens, notice it. And then release it, which is, as I described, what I do. Notice it and then release it. But I love the next part of this. Be willing to be happy with nothing. Void. You know, that's where we place the willingness. Sometimes people place the willingness to be happy with just what I have now. Willingness to be happy with, you know, something like that. This is saying, be willing to be happy with nothing, with absolute void, not even perception. Just happiness. For no reason, just happiness. Being, happiness, ising itself. And I think that's a wonderful, wonderful place to put the willingness until this outward seeking mechanism does completely die. And I do know that things do die. Right, I do know they do die. I've experienced little deaths like that before. It's just, again, it's allowing the death to happen. With that said, my time is done now. So I will release the mic, and I believe it's Lynn that will pick it up first. Thank you, everyone, and see you around. Bye.
Thank you, Regina.